I found this in Ganarum.
Ganarmir, me.
What is it?
Well, it's
significance.
Welcome to Black Friday Synthaholics. Everything 50% off. Thor busters, gangbusters, lots of busters.
We're free.
I'm not sure where we went.
50% off, free.
Free. Is it free? Are we free? We are free.
We are free.
This is your host, David Duncan.
And free, Aaron O'Brien.
He's extra free today.
I'm extra free.
Sugar free.
And we got Faith. Faith in the house.
Sugar-free Faith Hertzberg.
Sugar-free.
Yay.
She's sweet enough as it is.
There we go.
All natural.
You don't know me very well.
No, I don't.
So we're starting off our new series on things Faith has regrets.
Wait, what?
It was announced last episode. Yeah, it's a multi-part series
just like the Klingon four-part episode. Don't worry, mine will be an eight-part episode. So
eight-part, and mine will be a nice in-between six. So, want to get started?
No, we just finished up.
He's saying he's average.
Not bad, but not great.
I said it. Oh.
No, I said six. You said average.
So hopefully you've wrapped up your Thanksgiving meal, because we just passed Thanksgiving.
You haven't exploded like the guy in the Monty Python, The Meaning of Life.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
After you had the nice little mint wafer.
It's just so smudged.
It's just a little mint. It cleans the palate.
I couldn't eat another thing. and you survived your family. Hopefully you had a nice time. Hopefully you spent it with somebody you care for.
And hopefully you didn't get trampled earlier today, Black Friday.
Black Friday. I have to make a confession.
From a Synthaholic.
Yes. So we finished up Thanksgiving the other night, and then my wife wanted to pick up something from Target, because there was some deal for some toys for the kids.
Target.
And but then she wasn't feeling well, and she's like, oh, I'm not going to go.
So you don't want to sleep.
And yeah. No. And I went for her to Target that night at 8 o'clock.
Why didn't you send the co-janitor?
You know, and I'm a firm...
He was the co-janitor.
I'm a firm non-believer of Black Friday. I don't really get into it. I think it's... I know some people like it, and it's fine if you really do, but I just think it's kind of like, ugh, it's kind of icky.
Especially since it's crossed over into Thanksgiving now.
Yeah, that's wrong.
It's a holiday.
What are you doing to those poor people? You're making them work on their holiday?
It doesn't make any sense to me at all. And I am one of those people that I will spend 3 days at a convention. I will spend 12, 14 hours all day, corset, heels, don't care. I will wait in line, do anything you want to get autographs or whatever. Black Friday? Screw that.
Yeah.
I have actually been chased by an old lady with a walker.
I don't.
You will not get me in.
Yeah,
this.
But anyways, so I went there, and the line itself. I got everything I wanted probably within the first like 10-15 minutes of being in the store, and then
did someone come at you with a baseball bat?
No, but the line was literally like a half hour, 20 minute long line, and I was like, I just do not like this. Anyways, that's my don't judge me, but I just wanted to put that out there that I sunk to a new low.
See, this is what the internet's for. I just order things online on Cyber Monday. Screw the physical being in stores.
Yeah, but there are some deals you can get in stores that are better sometimes. Anyways.
Yeah, but is it worth your life?
Let's talk about something more interesting. Let's talk about Star Trek.
Oh, wait, yeah, we're Star Trek podcast. Yeah. I forget. We're no longer the Spaceballs podcast.
Yeah, so we're back to Star Trek, and we are going to be talking about a Deep Space Nine episode, Blaze of Glory. And why did we pick a Blaze of Glory? Because they actually mentioned Thanksgiving.
but they mentioned it last year.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah.
The year before, right. Yeah. But
so it happened.
There was a Thanksgiving meal at one point in space.
In Deep Space Nine, sort of. Probably between seasons.
Right. So Blaze of Glory, Deep Space Nine, is the episode where Sisko is on sort of his one-man mission to stop a potential war that might erupt between the Dominion, Cardassian, and the Alpha Quadrant.
Everyone else in the Alpha Quadrant. So,
yeah, so it's an interesting story, and we get our recurring character,
Michael Eddington.
Michael Eddington.
It's our last hurrah of Michael Eddington. Although it's our first time talking about him on Synthaholics, I definitely want to get in more into his character in another episode because he's
a good character.
He's got great episodes.
He's got great episodes.
So when he goes crazy, those episodes are nuts.
So it starts off. We have Sisko, Jake, and Nog are having a meal together. Nog's loving the squid, and Jake is regretting
also loving the squid until he finds out
there's tube grubs,
tube grub puree sauce.
Yes. Whatever, why would Sisko want to do that to his son?
Why would he want to do it to himself? He doesn't like Ferengis at all. He's never liked Ferengis. And, like, he only kind of, like, Nog because, like, I think Jake basically kind of begged him a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. But, so the Nog mentions to Sisko through the conversation that they're not, he's having a difficult time with the Klingons. Because he's working security on Deep Space Nine, and they don't take him seriously. And Sisko says, you're going to have to stand up to him. And he says, you might get your ass kicked, but, you know, at least they'll have their respect either way. So, and almost right after that, General Martok walks in. And Nog's like, ready to go.
and Sisko's like, no, not now. Not now.
This is not the time. No. He's going to take General Martok.
General's talking to me. I don't want you interrupting, you know.
Like. Yeah. So anyways, they leave, and General Martok gives Sisko the information that that there are potential missiles that are cloaked, the cloaking devices were given by the Klingons to the Maquis, and the Maquis has fired these missiles at Cardassia.
Cardassia Prime.
And we're not quite sure what type of missiles they are, but they're probably, as they would say, a list of horrible horribles. All sorts of different types of warheads that the Maquis...
Tactical nuclear torpedoes or something. Quantum torpedoes. Those are better than regular torpedoes.
Yeah, they went into a whole thing of what they like... some bio
mutagenic weapons and
yeah
biophasic
yeah no it was pretty bad. So he's like, well, if they hit Cardassia and after the fallout of that and they find out what you know the where the missiles came from, it would just be hell to pay. So the Dominion would go after all-out war with the Federation and the Klingons.
It could doom us all.
Right. So then the mission is to find those missiles, stop those missiles. And
the one person they know they can find the missiles is Eddington.
Yes.
So Sisko pays him a jail visit. Not a conjugal visit, though.
He's in the pokey.
Which this is a redress of the Voyager Brig set.
Yeah, in actually a reshot of regular one.
Yeah, and regular one. That's always a good reshoot. I like how sometimes they flip it upside down to make it look like it's different. Like they're like,
you ain't fooling nobody. That's regular one.
Lots of space stations look like that. I wonder why they never like redid a K-9. Because, I mean, they could have like made a new K-9, make it look a little bit better. It's a really basic model.
I think they were just trying to get away from that whole thing as fast as possible, you know.
Well, it's been a couple series since we'd seen K-9.
Yeah, it's true. So
maybe K-7.
The designs.
It's full of kindergartens.
The K-7 was so amazing. So Sisko pays him a visit, and Eddington doesn't seem to care whatsoever. He's like, I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn if that happens, as it was our last little hurrah to get rid of, you know, our last strike back at the Cardassians. And, you know, they're all dead anyways. The Maquis all dead, so what's the point, you know? Take out our last shot.
Don't want to start, he kind of wants to start a war there. Just make it his name's legacy.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, and he basically just takes them anyways. Eddington, you know, says, I'm not going to help you, and I'll be happy to die in this prison when the Jemadar come and attack it and destroy it, and I'll be in my cell when they come and kill me or they blow the station up.
And he'll be totally fine with it.
He'd be like, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's good. It's
he's got this crazy death wish ever since he was put in jail. He's like, yeah, screw it.
Well, meanwhile, in Deep Space Nine, Quark is in the infirmary and whining.
Oh, we forgot. That's almost at the beginning as well, yeah.
But, you know, it could be happening roughly at the same time. It's fine. So Quark is in the infirmary whining about hurting, and turns out that Morn threw a bar stool at him.
Basically put a bar stool across his face.
And
it just seems so strange, because Morn doesn't seem to do anything.
He just drinks. Maybe he was super drunk today, and he just had to throw that bar stool at Quark when he got freaked out. But anyway, it turns out Kira caught him, because Kira was praying, and Morn ran in naked, flashed Kira all over the place, and then was like, no, the prophets save us!
And the strange thing is that, well, what would have set Morn off like that? And basically, Quark admits in the very end that he might have said that they're all doomed, and they're all, you know, that...
If the Dominion have an attack, they're attack here first, and we're probably all going to die.
Yeah, exactly. So... So it freaks out Morn. So I think that was just a paint that the...
some people just don't deal with stress very well.
Yeah, I think it was that... Because it really doesn't get revisited later on. I just think it's to show the stress level on the Deep Space Nine has got to a point where it's a little...
Even the most chill characters are like freaking out.
Even Morn can't take it. So, yeah. So that was surprising. And Nog decides that he's on a one-man mission to put the Klingons in their place.
Yes. He's hanging out in the bar, and he's like, 65 decibels.
65 decibels.
He's like, man, like, they're so racist against Ferengi. It's like, okay, he can, like, crack his safe by listening to it. And he can tell exactly the decibel range just by listening.
Yeah, some kind of, like, a display in his eyes that he can, like, something like, oh. It's almost at 70.
They're part Borg. They have, like, display. Like, they can, like, see the tumblers by listening to them. And
right.
They can see, you know.
It's not quite 70 yet.
Like, yep.
And Nog makes a fool of himself when he falls over in his chair when he's at the bar, because he's going to tell these Klingons to stop headbutting each other and disturbing the peace.
Too bad this didn't make it into our Klingon episode. Klingon culture, headbutting.
Headbutting.
Like for...
And even General Martok says, you're doing it wrong.
You're not even... You just love tapping each other. Do it harder.
Do it harder. If you mean it. Yeah. Until the brains come out of your nose.
If you're not concussed, you're not doing it, right?
Right, exactly. So, Sisko sent out the Defiant before to look for these missiles, but they just kept on getting running into problems with the Jem'Hadar ships.
Their engines are too loud, or something like that.
Even though they're cloaked, they still leave a warp trail in the Badlands with all their
the nebula disturbance.
Yeah. And so what happens then is he decides he takes his runabout with Eddington to find this unknown base to plug in some deactivate codes, which I guess you can only do it at the base.
At the launch site.
Sisko's going into the Badlands to find an unknown base that Eddington's not telling him where the base is, not telling him what the codes are to deactivate the missiles.
Or how to get there.
So he's just going in the Badlands.
He's just handcuffed and be like, oh, I'm just fine.
I just want to remind people that space is vast. It's huge.
So Sisko's just flying around, just whatever.
He's just Yeah, we're just taking a shot.
Yeah, he was probably looking for Dominion ships to run into so he could get editing to do something.
Yeah, maybe he was flying towards the Jem'Hadar ship. So here we have probably the best part of this whole episode.
I would have been totally fine if this episode was just like the Eddington and Sisko talking in the shuttlecraft for the whole hour.
Yeah, this is hands down the best part of the whole episode. Them two bantering. First, he talks to Sisko about how Sisko he grew all the vegetables and everything for the Thanksgiving
dinner a year ago,
for the staff.
He was complaining about how the replicated food is just synthesized protein.
And you can tell the difference.
Yeah.
And how he grew his own food when
he became a food snob.
Became a food snob when he joined the Maquis.
So not only are the
Maquis pain in the asses because they're always trying to upheave the quadrant with their politics, but also they're food snobs. They're probably wine snobs too. As well.
No, this one's not dry enough for me.
Chardonnay. This pâté is passé.
The notes I'm getting from this are totally flat.
So, but then they get into the whole, like, you know, Eddington makes a comment that the tomato plants that he was growing have probably been destroyed when the Maquis was destroyed. And, you know, Sisko's like, well, there's going to be a lot
Sisko
more.
Sisko breaks down and cries at the hearing of tomatoes have perished.
Not tomatoes. So he says, well, we're going to have war, and a lot more things going to be burned down if we don't do something about this. And then they get into a whole back and forth debate over him joining the Maquis,
being a traitor to the Federation,
and Sisko having to pursue him to put him in jail, to pursuing the rest of the Maquis, and
something about revenge, and Sisko just
well,
what?
The great part about that was that that Sisko was like, well, so your answer to everything after he and the Maquis been basically eliminated or so reduced to nothing that you're going to fire these missiles and your legacy, Eddington, is going to be that you led these people to failure, but your last act was to create a gigantic war in the Federation, maybe the worst war we've ever seen. And he's like, you know, just for revenge. And he's like, you know, if revenge is good enough. He's like, what? That's what you want your legacy to be? Like, you can't even believe it.
Not exactly what I planned for, but
yep, it sounds good.
He's all for it. He's just
so Eddington, as always, seems to be just nothing but a thorn in your side. Just he can't.
I feel like he's contrary just to be contrary.
Yeah, he's a
just because he hates Sisko so much.
Yeah. I don't know. He's. I mean, the great thing about Eddington is the guy who's playing him, Ken Marshall, is so good at what he does, and obviously, Sisko and him just going back and forth, and their acting chops are so great.
Oh man, it's just so well acted. I'm glad editing is a reoccurring role for him, but the fact that he's so good, I wish there was more of him.
Yeah. And like I said, that shuttlecraft ride is probably the best part of this whole episode. I mean, everything else is okay, but you know, that's great. You know,
I mean, there's great beats throughout the episode, but like just that, like the dynamic between those two actors and them bouncing off each other is worth the watch of this episode.
And so they do run into Jem'Hadar ships, and he basically Sisko taunts Eddington to say, you know, you're going to have to, you know, get us out of this. And, you know, Eddington's like, no, I'm not doing anything. He takes the cuffs off Eddington.
Then he goes and makes a
Rakdegino. He's like, I'm just going to drink my coffee.
You know what? These replicators make darn good Klingon coffee.
He says, you're just going to let us all die. But,
I love how, like, Sisko's like, oh, they're one AU away. And AU stands for Astronomical Unit.
Yeah,
we do science here on Synthaholic sometimes. Astronomical Unit. An astronomical unit is the measurement basically from the sun to Earth.
Yeah.
So that's how far the Jem'Hadar are from them. Although, like, it takes light 8 minutes to reach an astronomical unit.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's about how long it takes for the sunlight to reach Earth. And so I guess they're not moving at warp, even though they said warp engines, because if they're moving anything faster than warp 2,
they don't really get
there
say
in like minutes.
Yeah, they don't really say what type of what speed, but they even going to sub light speed, they could be going pretty fast.
Well, yeah, but they'd be going under warp.
You could
at sub light. Yeah, you'd be under light speed, so it'd take longer than 8 minutes to get there. But it sounds like I didn't know they could use your warp engines in nebulas.
I don't think you can.
I don't think you can either, but they reach them pretty quick.
Again, they didn't really state how fast they were going. So, and it didn't look like through the graphics they were going at warp.
No.
Because they would have just blown by this the Badlands, wouldn't they?
Well, nebulas are huge. I mean, in
Voyager. Yeah, but they still wouldn't have they wouldn't have gone just right. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think nebulas are huge. I mean, in Voyager, they talked about having to fly around nebulas, and like it would take years to fly around some nebulas. Like nebulas are pretty big. Oh, yeah, they can go at warp in nebulas. Voyager does it, I think.
Well, so
Faith, you're a Voyager person. Don't they go through warp in nebulas?
I know that certain ones have certain issues because of what they're made of.
Yeah, I guess it depends.
Cautious getting through it.
I guess it depends on the nebula.
Right. Well, so what happens is Sisko kind of like calls his bluff and says, "I don't really think you have that much of a death wish. I think you're going to get us out of this."
And I love it. He's like, "Yeah." It's like, and Edison's like, "That's a mighty big bluff." And Sisko's like, "No, not really."
Right. Well, to Sisko's point, I mean, if they get captured by the Jem'Hadar, destroyed by the Jem'Hadar, they're not going to not going to stop the war, and it's going to be worse. No matter what, if they die. So it's he's like, his best bet is to bet on Eddington to, decide that that's not what his fate, where he wants it to be. Yeah. And he guesses right. And Eddington takes the controls. He does some crazy twirly thing with the ship to around them to try to lose that Jem'Hadar. And he does lose them temporarily, but the Jem'Hadar come back. And they basically are getting closer, and he does some crazy thing where they
have to realign the impulse manifold while they're flying, while the engine's on.
Right.
And he's like, "This is crazy." And Sisko and Anakin's like, "We'll have to keep the ship very still, otherwise it could blow up in your face."
Yeah. So
Sisko's like, "Huh."
So, but he, what they do is they use the, what they have to do is keep, they ignite the nebula gases and destroy the Jem'Hadar ship, and basically try to, from there they go to the base. Sisko gets banged around a little back. He's not too happy about it either.
No.
Yeah. But they make it, they get to this base. It's undetectable from out in space. There's a landing pad, they land, but the base is covered of the Jem'Hadar. Overran.
Yeah, I love El Sisko, like, she shoots a whole bunch of, like, bullets across this big wide open space.
Yeah.
And he ends up killing, like, two or three Jem'Hadar that were cloaked.
They were cloaked, yeah.
And then he's like, "Oh, I'm glad you was like, "I'm glad you remember that they do that."
Yeah, I know. Which was like, "What, did you forget?" For as smart as you are, you forgot? Anyways, they're going through the base, and they're obviously having to kill a bunch of Jem'Hadar, and they get to this place where all Eddington's friends have been slaughtered. They're all dead.
Just like a graveyard, like, yeah. Just laying out in the corridors.
And he's feeling pretty upset about it. And he promised Sisko when they got there, after everything's over, that he's going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Like you do.
You know, that's how editing do.
But so they've been at each other's throat this whole time, and Sisko's like, "You can't help it, do anything for these people. We just have to stop these missiles." And he goes, "That's all you care about is the damn missiles." And he's like, "Yeah, that's all I care about, stopping this war. This is the reason why we're here." And
I care about fighting you, Edison, once this is all done.
I'm gonna kick your ass.
I punched Q in the face. I'm pretty sure I can punch you in the face.
Yeah. And this one room, and Eddington opens it, and it's like a small, like, service closet, and it's like janitor's closet, and there's all these Maquis hiding inside of it.
Slightly larger than the thing Chekhov was hiding in and Wrath of Khan. Slightly bigger
slightly
than
larger,
that.
Slightly larger. But they're tucked in there nice. There's got to be about maybe 10 of them in there or so. But his Eddington's wife's there.
Rebecca.
And here we get the big reveal.
He's married.
Yeah. He wasn't gay.
Yeah, you would have, you know, I don't know.
Who knew? No, but no, the big reveal was that there was no missiles.
There was no missiles.
There never were. The missiles was a code word to get Sisko or some other higher-up Federation to take interest that they fired these missiles at Cardassia to go get Eddington to free them if they were in trouble, and which they were.
This is like so like...
This is such a long shot.
It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, like, I mean, I understand the code word and everything, but Eddington's, like, playing it so cool. It's like, if they're using this code word because they're in trouble,
right?
Shouldn't he act with a sense of slightly more urgency than, no, I'm not going to help you, Sisko.
Well,
I'm
he's going to help you. Yeah, he's bluffing so hard.
He forgets people are in danger.
Yeah, he's almost, like almost ready to, like, just, they're probably all dead anyways. But
I'm just going to egg Sisko on. I'm just going to keep pissing him off. That's like my life dream.
Yeah.
It seemed like you just played Sisko really, really well.
He did.
Because any other way, he wouldn't have really been able to get the end game that he got out of him.
Well, it's just Sisko's like, what if I refuse to take you? And then I would have volunteered. And I'm like,
when were you doing that?
Because you were saying you weren't going to help the entire time.
I just assumed that Sisko was just like, just put him on the damn runabout.
He
just told the guy, just put him on the damn
just
runabout.
Just tase him and beam him onto the runabout.
He's like, what am I doing here? He says, you're coming with me.
I figured that's what you had to do anyway, since you never saw how they got from point A to point B.
I just assumed they did a prisoner transfer. I mean, it's a regular one size.
Yeah.
The space, what do you want to call it?
Space station.
So it's not that big, but so was no missiles. There's no threat of war. It was just a ruse to get Sisko or somebody like him to come rescue the rest of the Maquis. And this is where Sisko promptly punches Eddington in the face.
What?
Yep, I deserve that. But, you know, he did go and save his friends and his wife. So, I mean, I guess that's you got to give him kudos for that. And Eddington actually did pretty well for, you know, what little resources he had.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for playing Sisko and everything else like that, he did pretty well.
So they're still surrounded by tons of Jem'Hadar.
They got to escape.
Got to escape. And Eddington stays behind.
Well, he got shot, so I think he kind of knew that. He knew he wasn't going to make it too much further. Sisko didn't want to leave him, but then he's like, no, I told you only one of us was going to be leaving here. And Sisko's like, yeah, you did say that.
Oh, well, I'll go.
Fuck you, I'm out. So,
it's like, peace.
Peace out. And so he's...
It's like, get Rebecca out of here.
So,
and Sisko's like,
kill Eddington and fulfill my dream? Yes. They get to the runabout, and Rebecca's like, well, what about Michael? You know, and he's like, he's not coming.
We've got to go.
We've got to go. And she's like, but. And she's like, we're going. And he's like, meanwhile, Eddington is looking for a show tune to end his last. He goes,
hey, Jem'Hadar, do you know any good songs?
You know any good songs?
Jem'Hadar don't know songs.
What's on your playlist?
We're 2 or 3 years old, and all we do is kill each other.
Yeah.
I am the one. I'm Alpha.
I just listen to Barney songs.
Our only song is, like, War is Life. I can't remember whatever their...
War is Life?
No, it's like War is Life and...
What song?
Obedience is power. Like they're their motto. That's like the only song they know.
Did you ever see the animated Hobbit Lord of the Rings movie?
The old one?
Yeah. Where there's a whip, there's a way. I bet you that their song. Anyways.
Oh, wow.
We're gonna march all day, all day, all day. Boy, I pulled that one out of the vault, didn't I?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Anyway, so
they didn't sing that one in the live action movie.
No, they kept away from that one.
I wonder why.
So Eddington goes down finally. He does cover.
Takes like 16 shots from Jemadar disruptors.
Yeah,
like they all hit him at once, and he's got enough to say Rebecca.
Rebecca. Actually, when he was said Rebecca, I was kind of thinking of the Kiss song Beth, but because I thought it'd be funny if you could end that with the song Beth, but I couldn't work out the joke in my head. You don't know what the song is, do you?
Ice.
Oh, God.
That would be a no.
Anyways,
he got iced.
Moving on. So
I know that's my default song to make you all cringe.
Here's the part where this is where I really get like, what? They get on the ship and they're flying away. Jemadar just lets them leave. I guess they don't have any kind of like cannons or anything to stop them.
They have all those missiles that they didn't fire.
Or they didn't have any any patrol ships or anything to even stop the runabout from taking off from the planet, which is even more confusing. Then, not just that, he's surrounded by Maquis, and somehow they're all just going home.
Yeah, let them just take them.
They're just like,
they don't like try to like beat him up, like gang beat him up or whatever.
Yeah, why do they just beat the shit out of Sisko and just like, sorry. You know, we're just going to shoot you out the airlock.
Runabouts are big, but they're not that big.
I'm just saying, you know, my point of view is like, they could have like even dropped him off on some like foregone.
Maybe Sisko only had the only key to the runabout, goes in the runabout by himself, then beams them all into the pattern buffer and takes them.
And they have just this brief shot as they're flying away is like Sisko's flying the runabout and he looks at Rebecca and Rebecca's got this like, you asshole. Face. You let my husband die.
Okay, I guess they didn't put him all in the pattern buffer.
Yeah, I don't know what he did. But then, you know, they're back at Deep Space Nine, and we don't know what happened to the rest of the Maquis. There's no explanation. They're not in jail. They didn't let him go free.
He ejected him out in the space from the runabout.
Kill them all. We don't know what happened to him.
No, but Sisko and Jadzia have a nice man-to-man talk.
Old man.
In his quarters about Eddington as a person, and they're trying to kind of wrap up who he was and what he was.
Yeah, let's put a footnote on Eddington. What shall we say?
Just to kind of wrap up. And
what should we say about that guy?
And, you know, he's like, I called him a traitor once, and, you know, he actually wasn't a traitor. He stood always for what he believed in.
Right.
Even though what he believed in that wasn't always aligned with what the Federation wanted, but
right.
he was a. He's like, it's romantic. A lost cause is romantic, and that's the best way he could have gone out.
Which I thought was kind of. I don't know. I didn't really buy into that, but I guess I understood where he was coming from.
Oh, I mean, if you see how theatrical the episode was before with Eddington, where, like, Sisko had to, like, pretend to be the guy from. Les Miserables.
I don't remember.
The gendarme or whatever.
I don't remember.
Sisko had to be the guy that Russell Crowe played in the...
stop digging yourself into this hole, man.
Yes! No! And then he was... And then Eddington was the guy Hugh Jackman was playing. So if we... Everyone's face-palming, sorry.
Okay. And we just one other thing just to wrap up. So Nog has an interaction with General Martok and some Klingons on the promenade. Says they can't be loitering. General Martok gives them this
snarl. You got either crazy or brave. And Nog's like a little bit of both.
and then he garners some respect from the general and hopefully from the rest of the Klingons. So you know. Not anything big, but that I guess it's kind of Nog's little intro to becoming a man.
A little Nog's growing up. Good old Nog.
So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Let's talk about just our reactions, takeaways, feelings. Do you have feelings, Dave?
What's a feeling?
Faith, do you have any feelings on this?
I'm sure I did somewhere.
Well, I'll start with mine since you guys don't seem to have any feelings.
Paddington. He's only like 6 episodes. He was so young and so bald.
So my feeling is that the whole Nog side story was a complete waste of time.
Well, from reading the Memory Alpha thing, I think they mostly did it because they wanted you to know that Martog was still around.
Who cares? Wasn't Martog in like the episode before or the right after that or a couple episodes back? I can't remember, but yeah, I mean he's floating around.
I don't know. It's just Memory Alpha said.
Wait a second. Why would they do? He walks in to tell Sisko what's going on.
Like, oh yeah, this, they wrote that story. They wrote.
There's no need for Nog in the rest of the story. You could have him in the beginning how Nog's having a hard time or.
I don't know. I like Aaron Eisenberg. I mean, it doesn't do much for the. I like that he gained respect of the Klingon.
And stand up for himself.
But what does this have to do with anything with the story?
Well, that's the thing with Star Trek. A lot of times, B stories have nothing to do with the A story. I mean, occasionally they do, but I feel like more often than not, the B story is like totally unrelated.
Well, we'll come back to that in a moment because I think there might have been a slight string that connected them. The other thing was obviously. Eddington's character always wanting to be something bigger or better, and he always seemed to be overshot or was kind of boxed into a corner, that kind of thing. That seemed like always be the feeling for him no matter what. I mean, sometimes it was his own fault, but he always seemed like he was given orders that he had no way to work around, and it may put him in a bad light with his other crew members. I think this was, him going to the Maquis was his time to kind of break out, do his own thing. So, I don't know. That was my feeling towards it. And I thought the missile thing was an interesting take. I actually think it would have been cooler if that was an actual thing that they actually stopped. I don't know why that was just an elaborate ruse to get them to... to save the Maquis. It just seems the remaining Maquis. It seemed odd.
I mean, I understand.
It made sense from the Maquis' sense of a point of view, though, because, I mean, that's about the only way to get Starfleet to consider it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I agree with that, but I mean, I'm saying, I mean, it makes sense writing wise, but I think they could have done something more exciting if they actually just stopped the missiles or whatever. I mean, if you cut out the Nog B storyline and just focused on if the missiles were real, I think that would be a lot more interesting. Because you'd have an extra 10 to 15 minutes of the episode to go into with all that. The other side of it is that where I was going with the connection between Nog and the A story was that maybe because Nog...
The mutual respect between Eddington, Sisko, and then Nog
finally standing up to what he was scared because, like, they said, you either get the respect, get your ass kicked, but either way, you're going to, they're going to recognize you. And Eddington's finally getting Sisko's recognition, even if he doesn't agree with it or doesn't endorse it, he's getting his recognition that he actually did something that he believed in. Yeah. So, I guess there's something to be said to that and standing up for what you believe in.
Tangentially, related, but...
Yeah, but my only thing is like it seemed like a lot of Starfleet officers just keep defecting to the Maquis. I mean, I don't know, maybe just because it's the story that we always hear the stories of it. I mean, maybe there's tons of them that just don't. But I mean, it just seems like there's a lot of Maquis.
Well, Sisko's just close to a lot of them, which is why Eddington was like, "This is personal for you."
Well, I mean, we got a good portion of the Voyager crew were Starfleet officers that defected. I don't know the exact ratio, but we had some.
Not many. Like I think B'Elanna didn't even finish the Starfleet Academy. I think she was a dropout, so she technically wasn't Starfleet. Chakotay was. Tuvok was, but Tuvok was...
Yeah, he was a double agent.
A double agent. Or triple agent, he was in Section 31. But,
possibly.
Definitely. I mean, if you count Renegade's canon...
I'm not going to get into that.
but I can't think of anyone else who was like.
I guess it just seems like a constant thing. Is like a lot of Starfleet officers just like yeah, you know, Starfleet's doing this wrong. I'm going to the Maquis.
Well, I mean, like, I mean, you know, they were just. I would say most of the Maquis was probably just people who lived on those borderland planets that got, you know,
screwed over.
Whenever they renegotiated the borders.
Yeah,
I mean, that's where the Maquis came from.
Right,
it's kind of like revolutionary stuff, but. You had a couple high-ranking Federation officers sympathize with the people, and
sure.
Leave. I mean, we had Eddington, the other captain Sisko was friends with, Chakotay,
right?
One or two other guys, maybe.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm just. My whole point, I guess, was just that there was. It just seems funny that we always hear about the Starfleet officers that all left. You know, Eddington talks to him about one of his academy friends who died in the battle. And, you know, that he defected the Maquis and, you know, I don't know.
It's yeah. Just,
so, anyway, so that's my takeaway. I think the other side of it, too, was after watching Sisko and Eddington go at it in the runabout there, it made me think about Chakotay and Captain Janeway, how I kind of would wish we'd see that kind of argument more often with them. We got it in the beginning.
If they were written that way more often, I think Voyager would have been a much better show.
Yeah.
Because, I know we're not talking about Voyager specifically this episode, but Voyager, they set up the Maquis in Next Generation, and they set it up a little bit more in Deep Space Nine so they could have a half Maquis crew, and then they just drop the Maquisism, sixth episode end. It's no longer a thing anymore.
Well, anyways, that would be, obviously they're two different actors and two different characters, you know, than Chakotay and Janeway, but I would just love to see that dynamic between them more. We saw it a little bit in the very, very beginning, the first maybe three or four, but not to that intensity level.
No, not at all.
In which I would love to see that more, so. But
although I haven't seen Robert Beltran in anything else, so I don't know if Robert Beltran's that caliber of actor that either of...
Might not have that intensity.
They too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, just to get back, also Ken Marshall, who played Eddington, he did a lot of great roles. A big movie back in the 80s when I grew up, not a lot of people remember it, is a movie called Crawl, and he played the lead actor in there. That was a great movie when I was a kid. Really enjoyed that a lot. And... he played Marco Polo in a mini TV miniseries with
a pool reenactment of Marco Polo.
No, with Leonard Nimoy. So,
awesome!
Yeah. So, he played in Quantum Leap as well with Scott Bakula.
Scott Bakula. He's got some.
He hasn't done anything too recently. So, but he's also getting a little up there in age. So.
Yeah, but, I had kind of a little bit of the same takeaway. I didn't get the whole missile thing. I understand the beginning of it, but then I don't understand why he hammed it up so long. Like, if his family's in danger, shouldn't you, clock's ticking?
Well, I'm here. I might as well do it. Yeah, if it had been better if he's like, I'm here, I might as well just do what I have to, Sisko, you know, instead of waiting till they're like half an AU, you know, these Jem'Hadar to blow us up.
Yeah,
it's like, how long are you going to play that game out?
It just didn't seem like a very smart game to play once they were in danger. If they're in danger, that means they're in danger of not saving his wife. I'm like, why? It builds drama, but it just doesn't make a lot of logical sense why he would have jerked around that long. He can't hate Sisko that much where he wants to put his wife in further danger.
I think he's just trying to make the role believable so that Sisko wouldn't think that he was actually faking it.
I guess, but
it's just... an ulterior motive.
Right. I mean, that makes sense, but it really seems like... Like, my final takeaway after seeing it felt like either the missiles should have been written as real...
Yeah.
Or, you know, why did he hold out that long? It just seems odd that he bluffed for that long. I was like, you really bluffed for a long time. Like, even up till when he opened the door for the janitor's closet with all the...
Yeah, in there, the whole time.
They're still like, here's the missile room. Here they are.
Big F you, Sisko.
He's like, wait, what about the missiles? Where's the console? Sorry. Made it all up.
It's on Rebecca's bum. It's a tattoo.
Psych. In here. So
yeah, some circles, some circuitural tattoos. I saw that was a thing. Like they're making circuit tattoos now. I'm like, oh,
yeah, on her bum. Okay, so what?
Plays it like a Game Boy. No, I'm sorry.
All right. Dave's, wow. Dave's sexual fantasy has been manifested.
No. Not at all.
I want my girlfriend to be
half machine.
Half video game. And while we're having sex, I will play her.
You should be looking at it as a video game anyways. You always want the highest score.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah. Gotta get that power up.
God damn, I bet that's going to be a, that's got to be something in the future. I don't even play video games. I can see that happening. You know?
Just pretend it's Super Mario, okay?
Well,
you'll be great.
That each person has some kind of, like you said, some kind of circuitry in them that you could actually tell when they're about to reach orgasm or highest pleasure levels, judging on their endorphins, and it's giving you a rating somewhere on their body how many levels up you're going.
Like right up their spine, like in Dead Space.
Well,
it just lights up.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
It's or like in Battlestar Galactica.
But yeah, they just keep on getting, and then like you can to, you know, press their buttons to get them
to where get, they need to go.
Where you need to go the most. I think we just invented something very perverse.
Wait, we need to copyright
us?
This.
What?
Yes.
Us?
I think we invented
like
this.
Cast.
All right. We'll have to put a patent on this and so we can make sell it whenever someone actually ends up making it.
And they can buy it on their Black Fridays.
Exactly. But now for 50% off, we want to make money on this.
Mm-hmm. So
gotta keep this going somehow.
Save us. We need investors.
We're going to go into R&D for a long time, so this podcast is going to get real boring.
We'd love to, like, you know, have our own studio, and we can make money if we could sell this idea. Have our own studio, get it padded and with a nice audio phone, man. You think we sound good now?
I think.
Just imagine how much better
imagine
we'll sound.
Imagine happy and stress free.
We're gonna sound so good. We're gonna be like right next to you, uncomfortably close.
You can feel us breathing
down
your neck.
We'll make sure we give you frequent updates.
Yeah, we'll be sort of like the Siri on your phone.
But you're this far from Synthaholics.
But give you even shittier answers. I hate Siri. Siri never helps me.
I think she's gotten less helpful with updates instead of more helpful.
I know. It's pretty bad. Any other feelings about this episode anybody want to go into before we totally go off the rails?
I think we already went completely off the rails, and I don't mind being off the rails. This was not one of my favorite episodes.
No, you didn't like it?
No. Oh, my God. I almost took a nap.
Like,
I'll be honest. I damn near slept through it twice.
Well, like, I...
Nap-worthy episode.
I thought this was going to be a good episode because Eddington was in it, and I usually like Eddington episodes. But to me, this is probably, like, one of my least favorite Eddington episodes. It is kind of slow. It really, the best part is that like five minutes of banter on the runabout, and that's like the best part of the episode. You know, that 5 minutes is like the best part of a 50-minute episode.
Awesome. It was just very smooth and very one just right into the other, and it just about fit me in.
Yeah, like, no, that the dynamic right there on the runabout, and actually even in between, like when he's talking to him in the holding center, and when he's you know, when they're going through the Maquis base, there's nothing. It doesn't have that zing. Then you know, it was really only when they're
on the shuttlecraft. That was like a five.
It's all one pitch too, which doesn't really help. There's just not enough of any points of emphasis.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know. Anyways, it's just I agree. I think the episode is a little bit like kind of plots along. And the Nog thing, it's not that I dislike that what his, like, you know, when he stands up to Martok and stuff like that, but it just it just, I don't think it has a place in the episode. It just really...
It's the only part I liked. It's what kept me going through the whole thing. It's like, oh, there should be another part of this scene. Oh, come on, please, just two more.
You know, the, you know, Faith, and that's the thing is, too, I always found Eddington is probably so unlikable. That's his issue with his character. He is so unlikable, and mm-hmm. this is probably the one time I actually saw a glimpse of, not that I liked him, but I understood him a little bit better.
Yeah, he became understandable in this episode and a little bit more relatable.
It does give you a lot more perspective of why he is the way he is. I mean, you do get that understanding.
Well, you know, and he made some comment, like, I don't remember what episode it was, that, you know, how he told Sisko, this is a past episode, how he would, you know, he would like to, he always wanted everyone to join Starfleet to become a captain. And, you know, and Sisko said, you could always, you know, transfer to the command division or something like that. And, he kind of like laughed it off, like, I don't think anybody's gonna ever want me as a captain because of, you know, all the stuff that he's done and his record and stuff like that. And not that he was a terrible officer all the time, but just like I said, I think the decisions that were made for him by his higher ups, like when they assigned him to Deep Space Nine, everything, they just kept on boxing him in, and he had no choice, and he kept on alienating people around him. You know, he's just you know, it's like he was. Not a likable person, but then everything that followed along with it, he made himself even worse, you know? And then finally he's like, I might as well become the most unpopular person. I'll join the Maquis.
Yeah, might as well. I mean, it'll make me rememberable.
I don't really recall the episode, like, if the... Why... Did you remember, like, did it give any deep reasons why he joined the Maquis other than just that he had sympathies towards them?
I can't remember exactly what his...
It wasn't very clear if it was anything, like, big.
Because it, like, came out of nowhere. Because you saw him, like, several episodes just as a random security officer that had a couple lines. And then all of a sudden, like, it was a big, like, switcheroo where he became, like, a...
Well, he took over, Odo's job there for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, he pushed him out, and everyone was kind of, like, upset with the whole thing. And it wasn't...
Yeah, that's why he was so unlikable at the beginning, because everyone likes Odo. I mean, he's a great character.
Yeah.
And this, like, dude, like, you've never seen him before, is like, you know...
You're going to follow Starfleet rules. You're not going to be doing your stinking changeling rules, you know? And I don't know. So, yeah, it's the whole... He was always unlikable. That's any. I think he was always to play, a foil in their towards the other characters. You know, just being someone to be against.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, this is not necessarily related to the episode, but after seeing how what kind of dynamic they had between Eddington and Sisko, like, it kind of made me even more sad that. No one from Deep Space Nine was in First Contact. Because you've got Worf on the Defiant, and, like, they should have had Kira. Like, I would have loved if Sisko was on the Defiant for First Contact, and he had to be on the ship with Picard. And I would have loved for Picard and Sisko to have butted heads, because they hated it, because Sisko hated him in Emissary.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is a, you know, baggage of his wife getting killed by Locutus. And, like, because, you know, it was the Borg movie, and then, like, Sisko came on, you know, you first hear about his character in the Battle of Wolf 359, it would have been a great wrap-up for the Sisko-Picard rivalry that they kind of had. Like, you know, that,
I don't know if they had a rivalry. I just think you just didn't like him.
I don't know, but I would just, like, the intenseness of that conversation with Eddington. I mean, I'd love to see, like, Sisko and, like, Picard, like, go at it.
Well, we get it on their first episode, kind of.
No, but it would be nice to kind of have a wrap-up and maybe them come out maybe liking each other.
To
and,
see more of that.
You know, because it started with the Borg, and it would be kind of nice to end up with the Borg. Like, you know, maybe their relationship became, like, you know, less nuanced.
Doesn't register for me. I always just figured that Sisko was... They established in the very beginning episode that Sisko was not going to be like Picard, and Sisko doesn't even like Picard. So, you know, I kind of took that as we're throwing out the idea of that person in command, like, is like Picard, that you've become so enamored with. We're throwing that out. We're doing something different. Like, we're going a completely different direction.
But I would have loved to have seen some other, even if Sisko wasn't in it. I mean, there's no reason O'Brien or Sakira or somebody else should have been on the ship instead of a bunch of nobodies from Deep Space Nine. Like, it just didn't make any sense for Worf to be the only main person. I know it's a Next Generation movie, but I mean, it would have been... Mm-hmm. It was the best opportunity for a Deep Space Nine crossover.
You just want Deep Space Nine.
I do!
Yeah.
But I mean, it's the Defiant. I mean, there should be other main characters from Deep Space Nine on the Defiant other than Worf.
I'm sorry. After I saw the Captain's movie, I kind of like understood why Avery Brooks is not getting called back for...
Oh, the Captains. We'll have to do a podcast on the Captains. Have you seen that, Faith?
No, I don't think I did.
Yeah, you're...
It's a documentary where William Shatner goes around and he talks to all the people who played Captains on Star Trek. And Avery Brooks is a madman.
Yeah.
Like, he is nuts. Like, he tries to wax eloquently, like, philosophical.
You know what?
It's just like, it's not... I don't think you're...
It's not that for me.
I feel like you're as smart as you think you are.
Yes. No, it's not that. The first thing is that I came away with that... one of two things. One, he's completely lost it. Like, he's so weird.
I feel like in season 7 of Deep Space Nine, where he's acting crazy, it's Avery Brooks acting like himself instead of like acting like Captain
Sisko.
Right,
but my thing is, like, either he has gone totally off the deep end, and that's, you just caught a glimpse of it in the Captain's movie, or he's just fucking with Shatner. And which could very well, because in the very beginning, like, there, you show him before he's at the piano. He's walking with Shatner, and they're talking, and he's coherent.
He's coherent, but he waxes way more eloquent than I think he actually is.
I just think he's extremely right-brained. Like, he's just very obtuse, and his mind is going to go in strange directions. And, I mean, he plays the piano beautifully.
Yeah, he does play the piano well.
But Shatner's trying to ask him questions.
and he's, like, laughing, and like, well, what do you think? What do you think about that?
Yeah, he's just playing the piano, like, and he's like making up songs, and he's making Shatner sing with him, and Shatner's like, what?
Yeah, it's...
And Shatner's kind of crazy anyways.
No, but this guy's like nuts. Like, yeah, yeah, it's definitely worth a watch. I think we should also talk about Trekkies at some point, the movie Trekkies.
Yeah.
And Trekkies 2, Warp 11, are the lovely people that let us use their music. Have an appearance in Trekkies 2, I believe.
I just watched the other night... what was it? Chaos on the Bridge, about the first three seasons of The Next Generation. Shatner goes and talks to, like, Rick Berman and all these people about everything about the first three seasons and how it had such a rocky beginning.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It's on Netflix. You can go watch it right now.
Oh, cool.
It's actually very well done, and Shatner talks to them all. And it's only, like, an hour, but it's worth watching because it's kind of funny because you just realize that Roddenberry was kind of tying their hands, but then there was all this pressure to make that show amazing, and nobody quite knew how to do it, but somehow they pulled it off. So,
well, I mean, Ronald D. Moore coming on in either into season 3 or beginning of season 4,
it makes all sense. After you see that, you're like, all right, it makes sense. Like, they fired so many writers.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, they were like, these writers would come in and, like, you know, Roddenberry would be like, this is terrible, you know.
Yeah, Ira Stephen Bear and Ronald D. Moore were like the key writers for Next Gen.
It was an interesting. It's worth watching if you haven't seen it. Like I said, it's an hour. It's on Netflix.
What's it called again?
It's called Chaos on the Bridge.
Chaos on the Bridge. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check it out.
Yeah, it was right on my feed when it came out. So I was like, oh, cool.
That's awesome.
And it's actually well done too. It's got a lot of cool illustrations of everyone. Like, they kind of like show scenes of them, of what they're talking about, like the meetings and stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
There's a great disparity story of how Patrick Stewart was basically very upset with how one of their what was going on, and how he was going to be the producer was like, well, you're gonna, you know, we'll just let you go, we'll have the captain killed, and we'll fill somebody else for it. And,
wow.
And Patrick Stewart was like, what, you know? But then Patrick Stewart said that he remembers it completely different. So, but I mean, it's an interesting thing, you know, how he said that. The producer was like, it's, you know, this is how we have to do it, and I agree with you, but, you know, this is just how it is. So, anyways, it's just interesting.
Yeah.
It's a good little documentary there.
Unfortunately, this week we don't really have any Riker scores or Harry fails. It's kind of like...
Unless you're going to play Rebecca's butt.
No, that doesn't count.
But we don't have any evidence to substantiate that, so.
No.
Yet.
Faith will start digging for photographic evidence. It's not there. Oh, well.
It'll be found soon enough.
No!
One of the other.
Just find that actress and pull her pants down. What are you doing?
Looking for your Game Boy!
Looking for your Game Boy! Bend over!
What was that, Faith?
Have we refilled the bail fund yet?
Yeah, bail fund? Yeah, we need to
send more money.
We don't want to get arrested. Or we don't want to stay in jail if we do get arrested.
Yeah.
I need to make more podcasts. So.
Yeah, if you want to hear more podcasts, make sure you bail us out. I've actually been trying to talk with the Trek Geeks podcast guys and have them on for an episode where we talk about Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
The train wreck of all train wrecks.
We figure I've been talking with them since basically our podcast has started, and I've been wanting to have them on for a while. I don't know when this will happen, but that's my tentative plan, to have them on sometime in the nearest future, I hope, so we can talk Star Trek V.
It'll be fun. They'll be.
It'll be entertaining.
Oh, they'll be.
Let's rephrase that.
There'll be a lot of bashing of Shatner.
Yes.
God.
Why does William Shatner climb a mountain? Why is he climbing the mountain?
Because it's there.
It's there.
Although, I can't really climb.
Oh, it's so bad. Anyway, I'm not sure what we'll be doing next week, but... I did want to give you that preview for the...
We're looking for bail money.
He's just teasing you again.
Yes, this will be like the Klingon tease for the Trek Geeks Sith the Hulks crossover.
They don't even like us.
Yes, they do. They said they'd reinvite you to the group.
Just joking. They keep saying that I can join their group, but I don't know when. When will I get that invite? No, they're cool guys. They're actually very, very nice. So that wraps up Blaze of Glory. Go out in a blaze of glory.
Yes, it's named that because Michael Eddington went out in a blaze of glory.
And I'm going to take my clothes off and run out under the moonlight. Go out in a blaze of glory. Get ready for the bail money, people.
It's going to be a very, very bright night.
It will be.
There'll be two full moons.
There's going to be a problem, and we apologize beforehand, but we do not claim responsibility.
Two full moons.
That's right.
And they're in motion. Look at that.
There's
woo.
Hey, it runs pretty quick, too.
It's been so warm. I just like it's like it's been
it
like
was 65 degrees yesterday.
Last night I was literally like
good frost to motivate him.
Oh, yeah, that will make me put the clothes back on.
Well, the reason we're freaking out is we're in Buffalo. Like we're used to like 6
last
foot
year
snow.
Literally we were six under 6 foot, 6 foot of snow
at this time literally. Last year. And it's still like in the 60s this week. It's ridiculous. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
God bless you, El Nino.
God bless El Nino.
At this point, they are very grateful for global warming.
I love it. Just keep bringing it. It's going to be palm trees here sooner or later.
Woo, we'll still start importing.
Shorts in December? Okay.
Alligators and Lake Erie.
We'll import those from Florida.
Just don't flush them into the sewers, man.
That's right. That's right. Alligators in the sewers.
Mm.
It's an E.T. reference. Drew Barrymore.
A snack in Alabama.
Yeah, there you go. Boots, too.
Right? You'd have a meal and an outfit. There you go. And you know, if you plan it right, you'd even have your show before dinner.
Ooh,
that's awesome.
And hopefully Faith will be joining us in the Northlands sometime in the next few
hopefully
months.
Hopefully it'll be in the 50s.
Hopefully it won't
and
be
we can all run naked in the moonlight.
Well, I'll be sitting here filming this endeavor, so if you guys wish to donate, get up there faster. This would be for your entertainment solely.
That'll be an extra on the Patreon.
Yes, it's right. The Sith the Holics Moonlight,
bonus
Moonlight Streak. We'll have to get a volunteer to videotape the three of us.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, that's what a tripod's for, David.
But, I mean, you got to have someone following, you know.
I should use my selfie stick.
I'm not even going to ask for you to
put that. We'll get a wagon. We'll put a tripod on the wagon. We'll pull the wagon with a rope. That way it'll follow us.
There you go. Oh,
there you go.
Woo.
That's much better than what I was thinking.
I know what you were thinking.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Did you bring the Vaseline?
Yeah, yeah. Why is it just shots of his bum?
Man, why that's a lot of hair.
Things to come, people. Things to come.
Look forward to with Synthaholics. So, all of our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com and at Warp 11. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. Our web address is synthaholics.com. You can tweet us at synthaholicduo. Me individually at David_J_Duncan.
I'm at Blackbird2004.
And you can find me at Faith Hertzberg.
And we have the Patreon up, so if you have
any spare change
to go to our battle fund, or if you want to see me,
we appreciate it. I'm going broke now.
If you want to see me run naked through the woods, you can go check that out
and see us all together at cons. This is another reason we have our Patreon.
Absolutely,
yes, yes.
And please go to iTunes and rate and review us. Give us lots of stars and send us an email. We love emails.
Yes, we like reading them on the air and answering them and maybe scarring you for life.
More than we already do.
Our email address is...
At synthaholics@yahoo.com.
Right, great.
Well, thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper.
You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Go die.
Hello. The missiles are coming.
The missiles is coming.
Missiles.
The missiles.
The clock.
Oh, no.
The clock. Oh, the clock. No.
The clock. The clock. The missiles.
The clock.
The
missiles.
Clock. The missiles. They go chicken noises. Cluck, cluck.
The Cardassia.
That's why they make chicken noises, because Cardassia chicken and make alliance with the Dominion.
The chicken Cardassian alliance.
I heard Kim Kardashian.
The Kardashian alliance. It's almost as deadly as the Kardashian alliance.
How are you guys tonight?
We are 50% off. It's Black Friday.
Smartass.
Oh,
you should introduce the show as a 50% off show, being Black Friday.
50% off the episode.
Door buster prizes.
Door.
That from my grandfather's side, I'm like a direct descendant to some like crazy Scot warrior from Scotland. And I just said, so what does that mean? He was a warlord. So what is he? He raped a lot of women. What's this? I mean, it's like almost like,
also, you know, half the world's also direct descendant of Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan, because he like. He raped every woman that he ever conquered. So, I mean, it's like, I don't know if that's really anything to tout, you know, like, yeah, I'm direct descended to...
We're all great descendants from Genghis Khan.
How many kissing cousins do you have?
Let me count on my six digits.
Yeah, so the guy's called is us.
Wow. Someone get that hat.
Oh, come on. That was good. You know?
That was good. I didn't catch it until for a second there.
It took me a minute, too. And then Aaron got it about the same time I did.
No, I'm a direct descendant of Somerled. He died in 1164, and he pushed the Vikings out of Scotland.
Nice. Too bad you're not a direct descendant of Boudicca.